Okay, Mr. Miller.
Thank you, Chairman Young. I'm Rob Miller, the district engineer for the Los Osos Community Services District. For about the last 10 years, so I've seen a lot of this type of issue. I think you'll hear both from staff and the community that the groundwater basin itself sort of matches level of interest with the wastewater project as a whole, so very important issue. Even though I'm representing the three water purveyors, two large, one small, we do have representatives in the audience from those purveyors as well. And that doesn't mean we don't happily disagree on some items, but today we tried to present items where we're fairly unified. This is a display that shows the limits of the Los Osos groundwater basin. You can see that there is a healthy level of this basin that actually goes into the ocean. So we do have an active interface with the ocean. This is a map that shows on the red dots the approximate distribution of water supply wells in the community and some monitoring wells also. And we're going to be looking at cross sections that are shown with this dashed line that denote, some of them are actually in your staff report, that denote the different layers within the basin. So this is basically an educational description of the groundwater basin. This display shows in cross section the primary production zones. There are also some perched aquifer zones, which are certainly receiving a significant amount of septic tank effluent, about half of it. But these are the zones from which we either are producing water or hope to produce more water. So there you see bedrock, and then in brown what we call the regional aquitard, or the thick clay zone that separates what we call our upper aquifer, which has a high level of nitrates with an average of, I think, 11 milligrams per liter as nitrogen, to our lower aquifer, which is today our primary source of drinking water. We do have some water supply wells in the upper aquifer, but our primary source is the lower aquifer. And I'll talk about the impact of seawater intrusion here in a second. Depicting a well, a westerly well, and then moving on. Three water suppliers, the district and Golden State Water Company, serve 95% plus of the water needs. S&T Mutual serves about 200 residential customers. Generally, the CSD serves the northern half, Golden State the southern half. Again, much of the upper aquifer is high in nitrates. That's well known, so blending or treatment's required at this time. There is some blending going on today, and there are some upper aquifer wells that do not have high nitrates today. But the lower aquifer does supply the lion's share of our water, 70 to 80%, as you show in the pie chart there. And the safe yield of that lower aquifer, which is basically characterized by water levels that prevent seawater intrusion, we're exceeding that safe yield in the lower zone by approximately 40%, so a significant level of exceedance and overpumping. That can be seen in water levels. These are water level contours that represent the lower aquifer, and you'll see here first in green those areas of the community, virtually the entire west side, that is currently at sea level, which is not protective of water quality. The area in blue, that's 5 feet below sea level. Again, this is the lower aquifer. And even an area that's 10 feet below sea level in the proximity of some of the major wells in the community. So certainly overpumping of the lower aquifer is occurring, and that's readily proven through water levels. This is a chart that was presented in the 2005 seawater intrusion study. Very important chart. In the red, you see the known seawater front as it was measured in 1985. And really, this is the two leading edges of the front, because we know seawater intrusion usually doesn't hit from 10 to 33,000 parts per million of TDS. It comes in over time, and this is sort of the mixing zone shown in red in 1985. And then again, analyzed in 2005, the leading edge of seawater intrusion, denoting a move in that front that today we believe to be somewhere in the 50 to 70 feet per year range. So there's the area of active seawater intrusion into the lower aquifer. And there you see the district's main water supply well, and Golden State Water Company does have other supply wells that are even farther to the west. So certainly some of the main infrastructure for water supply are at risk. This shows a cross-sectional view, And as you notice, because of the density of seawater, the deeper you go into the aquifer, here's our lower aquifer zones called zones D and E. And the seawater moves in more readily into those zones because of greater density. And so it forms this wedge, and there's our mixing zone. And then, again, the upper aquifer is not subject to seawater intrusion today. This is out at the sand spit near the ocean. As part of the 2005 study, we started it in 2002, completed in 2005, we were able to finally identify the source of water to our lower aquifer, three primary sources. One is just leakage from the upper aquifer. It's a thick clay, but we do have a very wide expanse and a high amount of pressure, so we do have significant leakage from upper to lower. We do know that Los Osos Creek is an important source of recharge to the lower aquifer. And the source of recharge, which we don't want, of course, is seawater, representing in 2000, between that 2002 and 2005 study period, it was at about 560 acre feet. I'll give you a brief explanation of what seems to be the sliding numbers here in a second. So current actions to combat seawater intrusion, I say current, I mean over the last number of years, and this is part of the reason why those numbers have reduced over time is because these actions have been taken. We do know that purveyor production has dropped. I think a lot of that is because of an increase in water rates, but also a greater awareness of our water issue. So we've had about a 15% reduction in average pumping. The purveyors have shifted production from those westerly wells over to farther to the east, which helps with seawater intrusion. You've heard about the county's retrofit upon sale ordinance. And then the purveyors are also attempting to grab more of the upper aquifer water through shifting to shallower wells, and we even have a nitrate removal unit which is being implemented by Golden State Water Company that will have the capacity to treat much of the upper aquifer once it's here in town, probably in the next 12 months. So the results of those actions, and nothing that I'm saying here should be construed as meaning these results are enough, they're a small start. Seawater intrusion was estimated at 560 acre feet. It's dropped to 420. Obviously, we have much more to do. Just so you get a sense of scale of the amount of salts that come into our basin every year, we're still looking at tens of thousands of tons per year of salt coming into the basin. Compare that in magnitude to the other contaminants that we usually measure in wastewater. Things like nitrogen are usually measured in the tens of tons. So it's certainly a big issue for our basin. It's something that's very important to the purveyors. With that, we entered into an agreement as part of a litigation, and this gives some of the history. I won't go through it in detail. But basically, we have an intermediate agreement, which we call the ISJ, or Interlocutory Stipulated Judgment, which requires us to work together to formulate a basin management plan to address seawater intrusion. Some of those components, hydrologic assessment of the basin, coming up with a strategy for balancing both the upper and lower aquifer to be protective, quantify water rights, meet conservation goals. We may have to abandon some wells or drastically reduce pumping, shifting to the east and the upper aquifer, share costs equitably, and, of course, coordination with the Los Osos Wastewater Project. In some ways, we're a little bit behind the project, as you've heard a little bit today, because some of the studies that are ongoing I think will be of real benefit to the project when they're done. In describing those current work efforts, we are on the cusp of releasing tasks 1 and 2, which is an update of our basin hydraulic model that will answer the question, pre-wastewater project, what's the safe yield of our upper and lower zone? Post-wastewater project, if it all goes out to spray fields, what's the safe yield? And then what are the different levels of Broaderson, another exchange, ag exchange, that could be used to help the basin. Task 2, we're looking at the east side of town, what we call the creek compartment. I'll show you a picture in a second. And that's basically the agricultural area, what we call the creek compartment of the basin. And it's fairly unknown what the real safe yield of that area is. We do have some belief that we need to look at if additional water supplies can be developed. And if we are successful in convincing agriculture to use reclaimed water, what sort of water supplies will be available in that area, and are they of adequate water quality for municipal uses. So that study is ongoing. We hope to see that out in the public eye around the June time frame, so fairly short term. Future work program, I use future loosely. I hope that future is soon. But task three is where we really prepare a groundwater basin infrastructure master plan. We have the physical solutions. We put prices on them. We evaluate groundwater recharge opportunities that goes beyond what's been done previously, looking at anything from groundwater recharge in the creek compartment to even to injection. Evaluating options for beneficial reuse, things like agricultural use and ag exchange, preparation of a basin management plan. In task four, we beef up our modeling capabilities to be able to predict over time the water levels and the water quality that we could expect to do a better job with monitoring. And then task five is regular groundwater monitoring and updating of the model. In terms of coordination with the project, there's no doubt that balancing this groundwater basin will be complicated and difficult. The purveyors have a high level of interest in seeing the treated effluent come back into the basin. My client, the Los Osos Community Services District, the board chair wasn't able to be here today, or he had to leave early. But the district certainly supports returning all the treated effluent to the basin, understanding that there may be some need to entitle a small amount of that water to agricultural environmental uses. They'd like to see that minimized to 10% or less. And then just to remind the board that all the purveyors have invested significant amount of capital to solve the water basin problem. On behalf of the Los Osos Community Services District, millions have, of course, been spent in the implementation of a wastewater project in order to try to achieve a sustainable basin. So long-term sustainability of the basin is critical for all the purveyors. We're very interested in enacting cooperative management to make sure that treated effluent is returned. We're excited about the switch to tertiary treatment. We think that gives us more options. On quality, we also are looking forward to, even under the auspices of the new state regulations, to both salt and nutrient management. We think those are important long-term elements for the basin. And then future hurdles, if we do need to look at reducing salts in the basin, of course, we don't have a ready ocean outfall to dispose of brine. So when folks think that, well, let's do RO, brine management is certainly a challenge there under current technology. Also, agricultural uses. Well, we think agricultural use of recycled water is a very good idea. The education and the marketing of that will be very important to move forward in order to get the growers to actually accept that water, and we understand that as well. So this is a summary of the purveyor's perspective on the groundwater basin. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Miller, are your clients comfortable with the amount of water reuse the county is proposing at this initial juncture?
You know, there's an acknowledgement that there may have to be an outlet valve for disposal purposes. The purveyors as a whole are supportive of bringing all the water back into the basin, 100% of it, understanding that there may, through condition of approval, have to be some allocation made to environmental uses, to ag uses. However, the interest is in bringing all the water back. Again, our work efforts, as you can see from the tasks pending, are perhaps lagging a little bit behind the county's efforts. We're certainly intending on completing those work efforts and don't have an interest in seeing the physical molecules sprayed out on Tanini. Have much more of an interest in advancing the reuse program as aggressively as possible so we could do that early.
Do you think that the county could be more aggressive in its approach? I mean, there's a component that it's going to reuse at Broderson and the balance going out of Tanini and spray fields.
Right. No, we understand that the county is providing the infrastructure,
right,
the stepping stones necessary to implement those reuse. We're excited that the pipeline is going to be designed,
okay,
for build-out.
Okay.
We do hope that some of the action steps, and it may not be the county as a wastewater project participant, but hopefully the county would participate as part of the ISJ. They are in that group also, mm-hmm, in advancing these before the project moves forward, so we don't have to wait 2 years before we, as purveyors, start talking to growers. Why wait? Why not take action now?
Okay. Dr. Hunter.
Thanks, Rob. That was really helpful. One thing you mentioned, which I was interested in, you just reiterated the fact that the timing of the ISJ effort with water purveyors is a little bit lagging behind. But you noted that some key information will be coming forward in June. And specifically, my ears perked up when you said you have more information on safe yield and possibly in balancing ag level exchange rates and recharge factors, balancing uses in the groundwater basin. That this information could be ready by June?
Yes, the purveyors will review it internally first. I'm hoping to get that before our board as soon as possible. I think a lot of members of the public, they've been waiting for it for 6 months, and so we do get a lot of inquiries to bring that information forward as soon as possible. So we're hoping for June.
So the question I have is, with a matter of months, with that coming together, the county is on its track of moving forward with bids on design for a system that's got one-third in the basin, two-thirds out of the basin. How could that information, or could that information be used to reconsider that strategy, that maybe when safe yield factors are nailed down and some of the slide and the numbers, the range of seawater intrusion and some of these numbers are pinned down so that everybody's working with the same set of numbers, that might be an important feature of the ultimate design. And so I'm curious if there's been any effort to sync those opportunities to utilize this very important and kind of emerging information that you all are working on. Maybe that's something Paavo can also address, because it seems like it's so close. So what, a few months here of waiting for this kind of information to help inform the ultimate design of this wastewater system.
I'm sure Paavo will want to make some statements too, but maybe to take a quick crack at that. The information that will be out there will identify the strategies that are necessary to balance the basin. It may not be able to get to the nuts and bolts. For instance, we might say, here's the potential for ag exchange and the ability to produce from that creek compartment, and if we can do X number of acre feet, we could balance the basin. But it may not be to the level of detail that, hey, we have at least an informal understanding with the growers that this is actually something they're interested in. So there'll be action steps. I didn't want to elevate expectations to the point where everything will be solved by June. There'll certainly be follow-up action steps to actually implement and look at the viability and the timing of those steps. And so if we were to wait till all that was resolved, it probably would result in more of a delay. But certainly we'll have a much clearer picture of at least how the quantities shake out and how that relates to basin balance.
And that's exactly what I'm interested in, because I think ultimately the mitigation rates have been kind of developed in this fluctuating set of numbers, and we're so close to knowing what those numbers really are.
I concur with Rob's comments regarding, it's one thing to do the analysis and, have an idea of where your approach is going to be, but there's going to be a number of additional steps afterwards. If we just look at, for example, the Monterey County Pollution Control Agency that has a very successful program up there, their safety valve is still an ocean outfall. And so we have to be very conscious of agricultural's needs. We've had a lot of comments from agriculture in front of the Board of Supervisors and the Planning Commission that have expressed concerns about their ability to market crops. So the analysis is one thing, and then implementation is another thing. Again, that's where the design of the wastewater project will have the capacity to take the treated effluent. There will be a backbone down LOVR that will, again, maximize the ability to get the water to agricultural constituents. But when we look at Monterey County's program, they still have the safety valve. That's the ocean outfall. We still think that the spray fields will be a good safety valve in this particular case, especially with the State Marine Reserve, the National Estuary. We just do not believe that that's going to be a feasible option for so we do think that the design is still appropriate and enhances the ability to do these ag exchanges. But I think the estimate I heard is it took 20 years up in Monterey County to implement that program. There's no reason why we would think that it would take any time of that period. But again, to make the wastewater project dependent on having the agricultural reuse program in place would cause wastewater project delays, and we wouldn't see the need to do the delays because in any event, we're still going to have that safety valve one way or another.
Yeah, I wasn't so much thinking about the ag exchange as the broader range of tools and options that will be apparent when these numbers are nailed down. Because in the document that I reviewed, the EIR, the final EIR, those numbers range even within your own sections of the different sections of the report. And so there is enough uncertainty, and I think it comes across in public comment, that the plan for protecting the groundwater basin just isn't certain enough. It has too many gaps in it. And that was my question to Rob, was if within a few months we have some additional numbers that will add certainty to our projections for taking the best steps possible to protect the groundwater supply, then that's what I'm after. I'm trying to see if a few months here of slowing down on your side and allowing for those numbers to come into your process, if that would be an important thing to consider.
It always is. I kind of have a different perspective on it, though. It's not so much of the protection of the groundwater basin, because there's existing seawater intrusion that is occurring already. It's a matter of what can be done in order to, reverse that pre-existing deficiency. And as Mr. Waddell had indicated, we believe that both through the strategies that are part of the project, as well as through some pretty aggressive conservation programs, aggressive in the terms of things that you normally would not see as part of a wastewater project, we are really doing the best efforts at this time in order to be able to address that, and we'll continue to work with the purveyors to enhance those efforts as well as we go forward in the future.
Well, there's one more possibility, and that would be that the design of the wastewater treatment plant could contribute to the rate of seawater intrusion. And I think that's the real question that I've detected in the public comments and in the concerns raised by some of the technical folks in our community that have looked at this, have been following this process. So that's why I'm asking this question. If in a couple of months we may have more certainty about the numbers that are being used to project the changes in the balance, and that includes the different factors, reducing septic or eliminating septic effluent discharge into the basin, and what the mitigation factors may or may not be at Brodersen, and what the safe yield might be. All of these numbers, I think, are in flux. And what I read and what I saw from response from the county seems like there's some gap there in how we're going forward with the design of a wastewater system.
Well, again, I believe the analysis is solid. I believe that the project development approach is solid. Ultimately, when we are back in front of your board for formal consideration of waste discharge requirements, our hydrogeologists will be here in order to go through the analysis and the level of depth that's necessary for the permitting function of your board.
I just have a question, maybe. Dr. Hunter, I'm kind of curious about something. Let's say that these numbers, that they in a couple of months come up with different numbers that change what the safe yield is or what the true mitigation is. Can that be adjusted by sending more water into Brodersen?
That's a type of issue that's really pretty difficult to be able to answer, because we have to have the numbers to be able to look at it. There's always the issue associated with whenever new evidence is developed, is that evidence going to create changes then that require reconsideration of the project approach? New evidence can also potentially require a supplemental environmental impact report. So we just simply have to wait for the analysis to be done in order to be able to see what its meaning is.
Okay. Mr. Chairman Young, if I might just make a brief statement that water conservation, too, of course, it can be implemented at various levels, and if we do find a gap, there might be more we can do on the conservation side to bridge that gap. And the purveyors are very interested in being forward-thinking on that.
At the risk of taking too much time, I just want to comment, though, since you brought up water conservation, I also note that there's a real question about how conservation factors, which the county is projecting or targeted a goal of 10%. We know the state is moving to 20%, so at some point that's going to occur. And I think I saw from the Slow Green Build comments that our consumption rate in Los Osos, we could actually go to 30% conservation. But the question is, would the wastewater treatment system be able to function properly with that kind of a reduction in flow? And without an analysis of that in the CEQA document, clearly that raises concerns, and I saw those concerns repeated a number of times in the comments. So I'm, like a number of people who have looked at this, questioning whether or not all of these factors are really being looked at carefully, and are we going to be constrained in our conservation goals by the demands of the technical operation for flow of that system? That would be a huge oversight if we went ahead with a project that's going to limit our conservation goals.
Okay. Gary Schalfrost.
Yeah,
Mr. Schalfrost.
Who's doing this study that Monica is wanting to wait for?
Cleethan Associates, and we've got the infrastructure element of it as Wallace Group.
And who's paying for it?
The ISJ Group, so everyone has a share. The county, Los Osos CSD, Golden State Water Company, and S&T Mutual Water Company. Those four parties.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. So, and any other questions for Mr. Miller? You were done with your presentation?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. I don't think we have any other presenters, right, Mr. Briggs? We can go to
that's correct.
Okay.
I might point out that when we got together with the county and the purveyors about a month ago, preparation for this meeting, and this notion of slowing down the wastewater project, and I said it's pretty hard to take that for a project that's been in the works for about 28 years to say it's going too fast. So it's beyond irony.
Okay. Folks, we're going to start with our public comment speakers. Everyone's going to have 2 minutes, and I would appreciate it when you see the yellow then red light come on that you wrap it up, because I'm not going to remind you to wrap it up like I normally do. At 2 minutes, we're going to shift to the next speaker. Frank Auxilio, Gwyneth Taylor, Al Barrow, Nick Franco, Roger Lyon. That would be the first group.
Is Roger Lyon really in there?
Yeah.
The right item?
Well, we got it. Oh, wait a minute. Okay, we're ready. Go ahead, sir.
Frank Auxilio, I already put on record a number of issues I had concerned with the water, with the seawater intrusion issue. You have that on record. I hope you had a chance to look at the ISJ, too. It also has a section in here about the AB 2701, about the authority of the county regarding dealing with seawater intrusion and water quality. I want to say that back in 73, on your site, there's a number of reports. 73 recommended that the county deal with conservation issues, that a very urgent issue in the groundwater protection study. In 79, this water board issued a request to see, do we have seawater intrusion? And in your 79 study said, answered, no, we do not have seawater intrusion in Los Osos. It's on your site. The Brown and Caldwell study in 83, again, you studied the nitrates issue, no seawater intrusion. And why I'm bringing this up, because I can't find that 85 study that said where the seawater intrusion started. If you look at your staff report, 1987, and Mr. Briggs was the engineer, supervising engineer on that, again, no seawater intrusion. You look at the hydrology study back in 88, no seawater intrusion study. You look at the Los Osos Community Service District Wastewater Facility Project Draft Project Report, no seawater intrusion. 2000, Los Osos Community Service District Water Management Plan, 2000, no seawater intrusion. So what I'm looking at is these figures are moving. I can't figure out what year did seawater intrusion started, at what point. because that's the measurement of how fast it's moving. Because if you look at your 2004 number six or letter of frequent questions answered, you said seawater intrusion was moving 100 feet, an acre feet a year.
Thank you for your comments.
You're welcome.
Gwen Taylor.
Good afternoon. My name is Gwen Taylor. We don't get 50% of our water from our water basin in Los Osos. We get 100% of our water from our water basin in Los Osos. Our water basin was compromised in 1973 by saltwater intrusion under the county's decision, not mine. There has been saltwater intrusion mentioned in many, many instances. And in 1990, there was a Los Osos water purveyor groundwater basin management agreement that was supposed to have been the answer-all for water being extracted over and above the limits of our groundwater, which never came into fruition. We have had engineering firms such as Brown and Caldwell, Metcalf and Eddy, all caution the county that there is going to be a great problem with saltwater intrusion if it is not addressed. Yet it was not, it is not, and it has just begun to be addressed. We have had saltwater intrusion for a long time, and we are continuing to have it. And if we don't do something about it immediately, we are not going to have water in our basin to drink. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Mr. Barrow.
Thank you. My name is Al Barrow, Coalition for Low Income Housing, Citizens for Affordable and Safe Environment. First of all, a little history. In December 2004, Cleath and Associates gave us a draft preview of the saltwater intrusion. At that time, we were talking over 100 feet a year. So this guesstimation has been chopped down and down to where it's 60 feet a year now. So I don't have a lot of faith in the level of certainty that is the way it's going. They did put in a well in the deep aquifer on Fern Street, and that went down 500 feet into, and that revealed it was pure seawater. They lost that monitoring well, it happens, but the casing slid in, so we can't monitor it anymore. That was about a quarter of a mile or a little bit more as a crow flies to the west of the main producing well was at the library at the time, another lower aquifer well. The second point I want to make is seawater intrusion can be mitigated by stopping pumping. That's the real strategy, that's the effective strategy. You have to get the purveyors to stop pulling that water out and drawing that seawater in. And they have, Mr. Zimmer is here from Golden State, you can ask him. He has ion exchange technology that will remove the nitrogen in the upper aquifer and make that 270,000 acre feet of water, folks. That's how much 80-year supply is in the upper aquifer without any recharge. And that's Cleath and Associates numbers. So I think you have to encourage them to stop pumping. And as you pointed out, your staff pointed out, you have no control over their pumping. So that's going to be a problem for you.
Thank you, Mr. Barrow, for your comments. Next speaker is Bill Moylan, Steve Page, David Dugan, and then Gail McPherson.
My name is Bill Moylan. I live in the Prohibition Zone, and I have a cease and desist order. But I'd like to talk about water conservation a little bit. My wife and I, ever since we got our cease and desist order, have always wanted to comply with fixing our system as fast as possible so we could get in compliance. We recently bought a washing machine that's a high-efficiency washing machine. It's equivalent to a front loader, and it uses much less water. We stopped watering our front yard. We're going to xeriscape it, and then we're going to retrofit our toilets and our shower heads. So I want you to know that we're doing everything in our power to be good water users, conservationists. And we've asked you several times what we could do to comply as fast as possible. And I suggested an on-site treatment system to Matt Thompson when he was on your staff. And he said, you don't want to go that way, Bill. So we're quite concerned because if the project is stopped for any reason because of people that are concerned about the choice of a system, like a gravity system versus step stag, and you have people that want to stop the county in their tracks, this could delay the beginning of the wastewater treatment plant. And according to your cease and desist order, we have until January 1, 2011. And I'd like to get an answer as to what we can do to stay in compliance if the wastewater treatment plant is stopped.
Thank you for your comments, Mr. Moylan. Steve Page.
I don't know that this is possible or not, but Gail wanted to defer her time to me.
No.
It's not. Okay.
No, we're not ceding time.
Okay. Could you put up the first slide? Okay. Presently in Los Osos, there are 211 direct distress properties. These are properties that are either bank-owned or in foreclosure, pre-foreclosure, or are short sales. This creates kind of a problem, and it's an ecological problem, because when it comes to time to hook up, do the on-site hookups on these properties, you're going to have a problem with people not having any equity in their property to borrow money to go and do the on-site hookup. So how do we solve the problem? Could you go to the second slide, please? Now go to the third slide. I have to kind of go through this fast. The environmental effects of not being able to hook up immediately would be the completion of the sewer system is withheld because of lagging hookups, and that home values would plummet further as the water board seeks enforcement against distressed homes, creating even more distressed homes. And then there's also the possibility of lawsuits against the water board for economic discrimination that would stagnate hookups on low-end properties. It's a real problem. And the final slide, please. I would suggest, I'm a member of Slow Green Belt and a member on LOCAC land use. I would suggest that you approve existing septic tanks for gray water holding, and that you set up grant funding in a model like people's self-help housing for supervised owner installation of on-site sewer lines. And you create kind of like a pool of people that help each other to take care of these distressed homes. And then I would also approve using existing septic tanks for rainwater holding tanks.
Thank you for
to
your
water
comments.
Landscaping.
Thank you for your comments.
Thank you.
Yes.
Can you tell me, Mr. Page?
Oh, sure.
I'm sorry. I didn't understand what you mean by distressed, 211 distressed homes.
Distressed homes are a classification of homes that that are either in foreclosure, pre-foreclosure, are bank-owned, are government-owned, or are on short sale. Also on Zello recently, they said that like in an area like Los Osos, anywhere in the country, you'll have at least 30% of the homes in a negative equity position. So it's going to be a problem when it comes to hooking up these homes. Okay, thank you.
Okay. David Dugan, is he here? Okay, let's see here. Okay, all right. Ms. McPherson.
Well, good afternoon. I guess I'll just take off where Steve Page left off. I was hoping that he could finish his slides. He had some nice ones, and it would have been helpful. But I think what he's saying is that there may be up to 30% of the people in Los Osos that are property owners that won't have the funding not only to connect to the sewer, but also to pay that $25,000 assessment that's going to kick in for $3,000 in additional costs each year. And so this may cause some problems, and I'm hoping that you will keep in mind that funding, when you convert from septic systems, funding is necessary, and that the funding issue is going to be resurfacing. Also, that goes into enforcement. Of course, enforcement is what you do to make people hook up when they won't hook up. And of course, enforcement isn't very effective if, you know, the old getting blood out of a turnip, you know, concept. And so I just want to say that I know there's milestones that are here for the county to take the project. Right now, the county is not the authorized agency to get funding until they actually vote to take the project. There is a milestone in the enforcement actions against the people in Los Osos that the county has to take that action. They had to pass the 218, if you recall. That was a milestone. That happened. Now we have to have the project go forward. They have to accept that. And I just want you to keep in mind that enforcement is going to be tangled into all of this, and we're hoping that we can get through this and resolve this in a better way than happened in the past. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your comments. Keith Weimer, Beverly DeWitt Moylan, Lawson Schaller. Is Mr. Perlman here? Yes, he is. Okay. All right.
Honorable Chair and Board members, my name is Keith Weimer, Los Osos Sustainability Group. The Los Osos Wastewater Project EIR estimates the project will reduce nitrates in the groundwater 1.7 milligrams at a cost of about $170 million. This is $100 million per milligram. The Yates and Williams study in 2003, the most in-depth study done on the effects of the wastewater project, says the improvement will take 30 years. But the authors express a lack of confidence in the scientific model they use, called the steady state model, because, quote, it fails to make use of historical fluctuations and trends in water levels and nitrate concentrations, which provide much more information about the hydrogeologic system than single average values. Thus, a reduction in nitrates is likely to be modest if it occurs at all. On the other hand, the project as currently proposed will effectively remove at least 500 acre-feet of water from a critically overdrafted basin. The EIR claims this will be a benefit, but the finding is not credible, partly because it relies on the steady state model. Although updated, it still fails to consider historical fluctuations. And I just briefly point out that Task 4 was to implement a transient dual hydraulic model, which records some of those fluctuations. Your active stewardship is needed to ensure a safe level of mitigation for this project, and more sustainable strategies are put into place. The Los Osos Sustainability Group has provided you an integrated water management system that uses more sustainable options and also provides this safe level of mitigation. By the way, if monitoring wells at Broderson show that it doesn't work, what's the backup? I suggest that you double up on conservation and you have a sure solution there. You got a 2-to-1 still. I request that your staff consider a condition of permitting our plan and some of the options in it as the salt and nutrient management plan for the waste discharge permit.
Thank you for your comments. Beverly DeWitt Moylan.
Afternoon, Board. My name is R3-2006-1041. I just have a few quick questions. For the staff who proposed our cease and desist order and for you, the Board, who executed our cease and desist order, what material benefit to the groundwater in Los Osos can you report following two to two and a half years of individual cooperation of 45 families with the requirements of their random and individual enforcement orders? What benefit to date? What are your criteria, my second question, to determine the success or failure of random individual enforcement against 45 families in Los Osos as a groundwater management strategy to date? Given the current state of the county project and the implied certainty of delay from protests, appeals, and litigation, what plans do you have in place to assist those of us with cease and desist orders to comply with the prohibition deadline as a groundwater management strategy? And finally, If you have no plan in place, when will that plan be in place? Thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments. Lawson Schaller.
Good afternoon, Lawson Schaller. First, I realize the Los Osos Wastewater Project is not going to be the end-all, be-all for our basin, but I am asking that the county do the maximum for our basin, not the minimum. It's clear we've got severe overdraft, saltwater intrusion. We need to maximize conservation, and we need to minimize the spray fields. We've got to bring that water back to our basin. Common sense dictates this, and I'm asking the board, all of you and the staff, to please use all of your influence, whatever you can, to encourage the county to maximize the conservation and bring that water back to our basin. If that basin fails, it's going to be greater stresses on our region and our state's resources, and we know we can't go there. They talk about partners that they need for conservation. Our CSD is in bankruptcy. They're struggling. I don't think we can rely on them as a real solid partner. S&T Mutual plays a very minor role in the basin. Golden State Water seems to be very solid. It's unreasonable to assume that Golden State is going to take on ag contracts and implementing conservation basin-wide. The county has single authority with AB 2701. They've got money in the budget, and they've got time. And they need to take a leadership role in this. I acknowledge the ISJ brings complications, but it's going to just create further delays, greater increase in dispersed authority. The county has a professional staff. They're doing a pretty good job. There are some shortcomings, but they're the only ones that are going to pull this off. And I'm asking you again to please encourage them in whatever way you can. Tonini, I've spoken to many professionals up and down the coast, engineers, PhDs, Orange County to Santa Barbara. Not a single one of them supported spray fields. They all question the logic of it. Every single one of them said, you can't do that. You've got to get that water recharged. Go to Ag Exchange. You know how successful Monterey is. It took quite a while, but we don't need to take that long to get it in. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Mr. Perlman, followed by Julie Tacker, Jeff Edwards, Leon Golden.
My name is Alon Perlman. I live in the Prohibition Zone. I've communicated to you multiple times, as have some other people from Los Osos, as regard the salt water. I call myself, it's not facetious, but I'm the executive director of Friends of the Water Board. I think the Water Board has actually moved forward in the last 2 years in terms of some very important aspects of its conduct.
I didn't know we had any friends.
Yeah.
And I stopped the clock.
Oh, I appreciate it. Things that the Water Board is doing now that is different than before is I'm seeing trends in documentation, and even the words of Executive Director Briggs, there is a recognition of such a thing as a regulatory burden. And this regulatory burden let's not say the economy was unpredictable. Had we had an unemployment rate of 10%, and less home ownership in the last 10 years, our economy would not be in the shape that it is in. However, a lot of the environmental laws that are coming down through the feds, through the state, are going to be very hard to implement. And I believe I didn't actually hear what exactly was presented to you earlier, but an issue that I've been trying to raise many times is where's the stewardship of the aquifer? And I think we're coming closer to it, but the ISJ elements are not sufficient. I have seen some very good entries to the draft EIR from the Water Board in recognition of the issues of salt other than saltwater intrusion. I see I'll be out of time in a few seconds. I believe the DIR has not accurately identified the need for sealed pipes to the extent that is necessary. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your comments. Julie Tacker.
Good afternoon, Board. I am Julie Tacker. I'm a 38-year resident of Los Osos. I want to thank Dr. Hunter for your terrific questions and your observations and, of course, your interest. I want to thank Lawson Schaller for nailing it on the head. And just wanted to say that last February, when the public of Los Osos came to you in public comment, it seemed like the light went on for the board, that you recognize that seawater intrusion is a serious issue in Los Osos, and that is first and foremost in the minds of Los Osans. Don't let your staff and don't let the county turn that light off. You're going to have a waste discharge order request in front of you, and you can use common sense and require that that water stay in our basin. The county's project has evaluated only one disposal option. It's a two-pronged approach, two-thirds to Sprayfields, one-third to Broderson, unless, of course, it's foggy or dark or cold or windy 24 hours before a rain, during a rain, or 24 hours after the rain. The Sprayfields cannot be used. They are useless. The new buzzword coming from county staff is that we must have a relief valve. The spray fields will be our relief valve. Well, certainly not on those days. So the brunt of the flows will go to Broderson. We've taken away the harvest wells, and now we'll just rely on monitoring Broderson. So there's a disconnect in this disposal scheme. I beg you to use common sense. I know I'm going to run out of time, and I know you can do a better job than what the county's proposing today. Thanks.
Thank you for your comments. Jeff Edwards, Leon Golden, Martha Golden, then Don Bearden.
Mr. Chairman, before you start the time, I'd like to get my PowerPoint presentation prepared.
Okay.
Good.
You ready?
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, board members, good afternoon. My name is Jeff Edwards. I'm a 30-year resident of Los Osos and a 25-year supporter of a wastewater project. The intent of today's meeting is not just a status report. We're at a defining moment in this project. We need scientific input. Presently, the project has decoupled quantity from qualitative issues. And in the past, this project's been all about the wastewater projects has been the number one basin recharge or basin return method or modality of anything. So in looking at these, we've heard that over 75% of our domestic supply comes from the lower basin. You've heard that the seawater wedge is coming in. It's right here at about the Midtown location. It's actually, if you look at the 4,000 feet it's traveled, it's actually at about 100 feet per year. The San Luis Obispo County project is flawed at Tonini. You've heard about the export of the water. They've failed to return the treated effluent to the groundwater basin. There's a county contention that the interlocutory stipulated judgment of the ISJ will compel the purveyors to achieve a beneficial use. But let's acknowledge the ISJ is a voluntary, non-binding agreement that can be canceled with a 60-day notice. Disposal of treated effluent must be achieved within the basin. You've heard about task two. That's in the second bullet. Task or another companion or analogous study was conducted in July 2006, and it indicates that if using groundwater modeling, there may be more than two-thirds of the lower aquifer recharge would come from the Creek Valley Alluvial Aquifer. We need to understand the Creek Valley Alluvial Aquifer. Here it is. Ag use is overlying. Here's the Tonini project, and our groundwater basin is here. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Leon Golden.
Hi, my name is Leon Golden. Before I became a lawyer, I was a plumber. And I worked as a plumber for 12 years, so I have some experience in this area. And I want to point out that Dr. Hunter was absolutely correct. The so-called gravity sewer, that these folks are trying to sell you, that they've been selling over and over again, will not work if we go to the kind of water conservation that we must go to. The solid waste will just remain in place. You're going to have to get in there and either vacuum it out, or you're going to have to find water from somewhere to wash it out. It just won't work. I would also second the people who preceded me on the question of bringing that water back to the basin. That has to be the first priority, and it seems to me that is your responsibility. Also, this business of looking at surveys. Hey, surveys can be constructed, and if you looked at this one, you'd see that how it was constructed. It was constructed to bring about a certain result, and it did. I will rest on that one. Now, finally, we have in Mr. Algren a very creative accountant. Other lawyers might call him a forensic accountant. I'm sure Mr. Young knows what I'm talking about when I call him that. And he has no experience whatsoever in building sewers, but he is the best spin master I have seen in 62 years of being involved in politics. This is the man who told us when we started this project that water was not an issue. This is the man who was told that Broadison might not work, said, oh, well, you know, a couple of $1 million here or there, we'll find something else to replace it. Look for a project that's finished
Thank you for your comments, Mr. Golden. Martha Golden.
Good afternoon. My husband and I are property owners outside of the prohibition zone. But we are within the water basin for Los Osos. I make that remark and point that out to you because you're talking about the wastewater project in the context of water and saltwater intrusion for the basin. The county's present plan, no matter how it has been spun to you, and I have heard it every day, a different set of figures. Every day, well, yes, we're going to have recharge, but, you know, we've got the backbone for the recharge. And at build-out, we will have the recharge. But the reality is that the project, as your staff points out in its response to the question, has absolutely no recharge element, which means no water in the aquifers. It means no trees fed by the groundwater, no shrubs fed by the groundwater, no endangered species preserved, nothing to sustain life in Los Osos. And that applies not just to the people in the prohibition zone, but it's our water, all of us, every single person who has to get water, and every tree and every shrub that has to get water in the basin. And I would urge you that whatever you do, you insist that the water not be sprayed away out at Tonini, outside our basin, wasteful, and not rely upon a very iffy Broderson, which by magic somehow doubles the amount of effluent that comes back from compared with any other effluent that comes back into the system at the present time. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Don Bearden, Richard Margetson, Bruce Payne, Lindy Owen.
Don Bearden, Los Osos Prohibition Zone. I think the real problem here is would a creek discharge be permittable? Because the only way you're going to get the stuff back without using spray fields is having a creek discharge. And what kind of requirements would be put on a surface water discharge to the creek? Would it be similar to the men's colony? Would Title 22 water be okay? Or would you have to even do further treatment of the water before putting it to the creek And once dry weather flows are established to the creek, when it's normally dry, do you have to maintain those flows then and never shut them off? These are the kind of questions that we need to know before we support that type of project. Thank you.
Okay, Richard Margeson.
Richard Margeson, you heard today, first of all, I want to agree with Monica about waiting for this report that Rob Miller was talking about, because you heard today that the old project, which we fought for years, had an inadequate disposal plan. It was stated, an inadequate disposal plan. Do we want to end up in that situation again? And if we get to the 420 acre feet a year of seawater intrusion, that's still 420 acre feet moving inward every year. We're not stemming anything. We still have it moving in. And for $165 million, I think we should at least have the opportunities to reduce that number as much as possible. And, with 2 minutes, I would never be able to explain it all, but there are some serious problems with the water conservation numbers in that EIR and some of the flow analysis. And then the last thing, someone asked about the purple pipe distribution or line coming back into town, if it would handle the entire flow. I believe the line's coming back into town. What I think the follow-up question needed to be is, will the purple pipe system have the distribution capability to distribute all of that water around town? And I don't think that's part of this project at this point. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Bruce Payne.
Bruce Payne, resident of Los Osos. Last time I was here in this room, I testified that we were looking at saltwater intrusion as a big problem. I'm glad to see we're addressing it today. The thing you need to look at is the fact that saltwater is heavier than freshwater. We have a limited amount of space for freshwater in the lower aquifer. How much freshwater is it going to take to push that salt water back out? Is it already too far in? Will we have enough water pressure to push it out? We may not be able to reverse saltwater intrusion at this time. And now we're talking about purple pipe. There's no purple pipe in this project the county's got planned. The purple pipe is intended to be produced by the water purveyors. They're the people who are going to supposedly pay for purple pipe. It's up to $165 million plus another $4 million, Mr. Ogren says, for tertiary treatment on top of the $165 million, which the old project was, anyway. And I talk about gallons instead of acre feet. It was 1.4 million gallons a day production in dry weather. And this two-thirds of 1.4 million gallons is 900 and some odd feet, just under a million gallons a day that they intend to spray in spray fields. We can't stand to lose a million gallons a day and have saltwater intrusion. The best project, actually, is no project. We have already in place recharge of the upper aquifer with no danger of liquefaction, and the nitrates are down to tenths over 10 milligrams per liter. They were down to 10.3 before the ACL fine hearing in October. The five wells were polluted deliberately to bring it up, one of them even 52 milligrams per liter. That's 2 milligrams per liter more than it comes out of the septic tank.
Thank you for your comments, Mr. Payne. Lindy Owen, Piper Riley, then last speaker is Ben DeFatta.